Okay, you might want to go ahead and turn over to Psalms 59 and just mark the Bible there. We'll be getting into that very shortly. I hope everybody brought their notebook with them. If you didn't, maybe you can sit with somebody that's close by and share with them. But we're going to be looking at the notebook somewhat today. I know Tim doesn't do that a whole lot, but the nature of the study today is one where Tim wanted me to discuss a couple of things in regard to laments. Let me just say right off the bat, I'm very happy to have the opportunity to teach this class this morning. I would have rather sat at the feet of Tim and be able to appreciate what Tim is teaching us. The only regret that I have at all in regard to this class is that I didn't have the opportunity to, when I was younger, maybe 25, 30 years ago, to have had the opportunity to look at the Book of Psalms as Tim has directed us. If you've had that opportunity, those of you who are younger, I hope you really apply yourselves and really appreciate what's being done right now. It's going to help you have an appreciation for the Psalms for the rest of your life. And again, I wish I would have had that opportunity a long time ago. So again, if you would, take the notebook and turn over to what is the 9th page. So just thumb through it. And when you get to the 9th page, that's where we're going to start this morning. What I'd like to do today, if I could, as quickly as I can, it's going to be difficult, but with the material we're trying to cover. I'd like, first of all, just to kind of go over some of the things that Tim has directed our minds towards, and that is the elements of a lament. The typical elements of a lament. And he lists 10 different things here. And so we'll quickly go through those and try to get an idea. And then we're going to go to Psalms 59. And we're going to look at that, read that, try to appreciate it, and then try to pick out some of these different elements within that psalm. You'll remember in the past 3 or 4 weeks, Tim has talked about how there's several different groups, if you will, of psalms. The lament is one of the most obvious ones. There's more of those than any other. But he spoke of the Thanksgiving psalm, the hymn, trust psalms, historical type of psalms, royal and kingship type of psalms, and wisdom psalms. And but again, our subject right now is that of the lament, and that as well, when you look at one of those, by the way, let's just stop very quickly. When we talk about a psalm that is more of a lament, what are we talking about? What is that? What's going to be characteristic of that type of psalm? A cry for help. Okay? And again, we see more of those types than any other. And but within these types of psalms, then, these cries for help, if you are on the 9th page there, you'll see 10 different things that are listed. And again, the first one is an address to God. And let me just quickly go through these. Another is a remembrance of past salvation or a reference to a historical event. We'll see that. Limitation of present distress. A description of the wicked. You'll see that quite often. A declaration of trust in God. Confession and plea for forgiveness. A petition. And it can vary in different ways. Sometimes it's a plea to save me or a plea to punish others. A petition to God to do that. The 8th one down there is motivation for God to act. 9th one is a vow of praise. And 10, an assurance that God has heard the prayer. And so if you would, just go ahead and turn to the next page there, and we'll kind of just briefly, again, talk about these very generically. Again, an address, that's pretty obvious. And as a matter of fact, if you turn over to what would be, I think, the 11th page, there is a little bit more description as to what that is. At the top of the page, it should say elements of lament, address to God. And he points out here that there's two different ways that is used. Sometimes it's very simple. It's just a very simple calling to God. In Psalms 3 and verse 1, O Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? So just very simple. O Lord, just an address to God. But then at other times, it's much more in depth, and it's much more elaborate, as is pointed out here. And it's much more in the form of pleading to God. And Psalms 54 verse 2 is an example of that. Psalms 88, 1 and 2 at the bottom of the page. O Lord, the God who saves me, day and night I cry out before you. May my prayer come before you. Turn your ear to my cry. So it becomes much more elaborate. So, again, in regard to past salvation, if you look on, again, the 9th page on the back side there where it says the typical lament, again, it speaks, it gives a reference to one here. It says, Thou hast been our God in ages past. Thou hast led us safely and given us triumph over our enemies. So again, these references to the past and how God was their salvation, how he delivered them. If you're there on page, the 9th page again on the back side, lament, and then a quotation here, but now my soul draws near the pit, my enemies rejoice and wait. So again, this reference to this point of despair, of being in despair, this crying out, you know, but realizing that the situation is difficult, and therefore this plea to God in prayer. Description of the wicked. In reference here, the wicked see the righteous, their heart is filled with envy. I want to talk about that one just a little bit more. Again, if you turn over, let's see, it would be 10, 11, I believe the 11th page. And at the top it says, elements of lament, description of the wicked. I hope everybody's there. See that? Again, let's get this down. I want to just quickly as I can go over this and then go into the psalm and see if we notice these things. Realize I'm doing a lot of talking, but if you got a question or a comment, please feel free to interject. Anyways, at the top of the page where it says elements of lament, description of the wicked. Let me just read this heading here. It says, references to the wicked often occur in the lamentation, but these are not to be confused with the element of description of the wicked. When the wicked are mentioned in lamentation, the emphasis is on the evil that they have done to the psalmist or his people. In the description, the emphasis is on what type of people the wicked are. In the following passages, lamentation is seen in italics while description is underlined. So if you look at that first one there, Psalms 54:3, it says, For strangers are risen up against me. What's that going to be there? How is that being used?
It's the description.
What is it? Yeah. It's speaking more of the action, isn't it? to speaking more of the action. Does everybody see that? In that last sentence there of Psalms 54:3, they have not set God before them. What's happening there? What is that? It does describe the wicked, doesn't it? It says they have not set God before them. It's saying something about their character. It's not speaking of an action that's being done, but it's speaking of their character. Again, this is something that you're going to see quite often in the Psalms. It speaks of the evil man's character. So we'll notice this more in just a few minutes. Any questions, any comments in regard to that? Okay, let's go back to the ninth page again. Under Roman numeral 5 there, it says confession and plea for forgiveness. Confession and plea for forgiveness. Again, quite often these are things that you see in the Psalms, especially the lament. It says, remember not my sin against me. Let not them that trust in thee be put to shame. So, you know, this plea, remember not my sin against me. So, you see this very repentant attitude and this plea that God does not remember this, the sins. And so, they petition God in that way. Sometimes there is not that, and the one we're going to look at, I don't think you really see that so much. Again, if you turn over, I believe let's see if I can find the right page here. If you notice on this ninth page on the back side there where it has Roman numeral 5, it also has another Roman numeral 5 in italics and or in parentheses rather, and it says declare innocence. Sometimes it comes in that form, and you'll notice here a reference to where it says search me and know I have not turned aside from thy precepts. So, you know, sometimes the one who's praying in this lament is saying, you know, I'm not guilty. I'm not guilty. And kind of a flip side of the coin there. So sometimes if one is guilty, they're pleading for forgiveness, and at other times they're saying, you know, I'm not guilty. So we'll notice that as well. Any questions, comments, far and further? Okay. I'm trying to manage my time here and get through this quickly. The next one, statement of trust. For thee I wait. Hide me in the shelter of thy wings. I think we can see the trust that is there. For thee I wait. You're acknowledging God and that you've placed your trust in him. And again, this is something we'll see often. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute as well. The next one, Roman numeral 7, petition. Quite often, the psalmist is praying that you save me. Please save me in this situation, in this desperate situation of despair. Save me, but at the same time, you'll see sometimes where they're asking for the others, the enemy, the wicked, the transgressor, to be punished. The next one, Roman numeral 8, I think, says motive clause. And the quotation here, that thy name might be glorified and people know that thou art God. I believe there is a reference page to that one. Yes. The 11th page on the back side, if you'll turn over there. 11th page back side. Here it says elements of lament, motivation for God to act. Some motivations refer simply to God's name or glory. Help us, O God, of our salvation, for the glory of thy name. And deliver us and forgive our sins for thy name's sake. And the next one, for thy name's sake, O Jehovah, pardon my iniquity, for it is great. So they're pleading, the psalmist is pleading to God, you know, for your name's sake, this is why you should do this. This is why you should punish your enemy. You know, I thought it was interesting when Tim talked about, typically when you look at the Psalms, what you see is not this plea so much that you do this for me, but it's do this for your sake, God. Do this for your sake. And I think you can really appreciate that quite often with David, and as well as the others. You know, you should punish the wicked for your sake, because of who you are. But as we look further down here, it says some motivations are more developed and focus on God's reputation among the nations. Let's take the one at the bottom. Let them be put to shame and dismayed forever. Yea, let them be confounded and perish, that they may know that thou alone, Jehovah, art the most high over all the earth. So it's this plea in regard to God's reputation. He's being maybe mocked, or his people are being mocked. So God, punish these people, you know, for your reputation. And so it's about God, not about the psalmist or me. So again, we'll appreciate that more when we get into Psalms 59 here. The vow of praise, number 9, on the 9th page, on the back side of the 9th page. This is another one of the elements that you quite often see. And the quotation here, that I might sing thy praise and glorify thy name in the midst of the congregation, that I might sing thy praise and glorify thy name. And quite often, where do you see this? In a psalm, in a lament. At the beginning, in the middle, at the end, where do you see it? More at the end, don't you? And and we'll see that today as well. Number 10, declaration of having been heard. For thou hast heard my cry, and I will see thy salvation. A recognition that the person has been heard, that thou hast heard my cry. So again, these are typical elements that you'll see quite often in the Psalms, in particular in the laments. So as we go a little bit further here, I think we can appreciate this a lot more. Having said all of that, any questions or comments before we go to Psalm 59 now? Okay, I know that was kind of a lot of talking, but felt like it was pretty necessary that we get that established. Now we'll go into Psalms 59 and try to appreciate how that this is obviously very true. You know, I know in times past when I would read Psalms, you know, I might appreciate some of these things, but I didn't really focus in and try to take note that, yes, this is all happening. And again, it happens quite frequently. And it is, I think, very important to appreciate. If you do, I think you're going to have a much deeper appreciation for the Psalms, much deeper appreciation for them. So, Psalms 59. If you're not there already, please turn over to that that Psalm. Okay. First of all, who do we believe this psalm was written by, and for what reason? Okay. And David, in a lot of his psalms, you know, I mean, he's very eloquent about his enemies attacking him, but his trust in God. And this one is believed to be taken, or is believed to have reference to David's situation in regard to Saul wanting to kill him. I think before we actually go in and read this, let's go back to 1 Samuel. Keep your finger there, but let's turn back to 1 Samuel, the 19th chapter. Actually, I kind of like to start with the 18th chapter. And for time's sake, let me just quickly read this. I'd like to start in First Samuel 18, and I want to begin with verse 5, just kind of get the setting here. And I think we'll have a much deeper appreciation for Psalm 59. 1 Samuel 18, beginning with verse 5. It says, "So David went out wherever Saul sent him, and behaved wisely. And Saul set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people, and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Now it happened, as they were coming home, when David was returning from the slaughter of the Philistine," speaking of what? Okay, Goliath being slain. So anyways, it continues, "that the women had come out of the cities of Israel, singing and dancing to meet King Saul with tambourines, with joy, and with musical instruments. So the women sang as they danced and said, 'Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s.' Then Saul was very angry, and the saying displeased him. And he said, 'They have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed only thousands. Now what more can he have but the kingdom?' So Saul eyed David from that day forward." So when you look at this, one thing's very obvious. Saul feels very threatened by David. He feels very threatened by him. And so he's very envious, and he, at least as we'll see here, he wants to kill David. And of course, David's first wife is who? Michael, Saul's daughter, right? So this is kind of a very difficult situation. And on top of it, Jonathan, Saul's son, is a great friend of David. Nevertheless, let's start then in 1 Samuel, the 19th chapter, verse 8, and just read through about verse 12 here. "And there was war again, and David went out and fought with the Philistines, and struck them with a mighty blow, and they fled from him. Now the distressing spirit from the Lord came upon Saul as he sat in his house with his spear in his hand. And David was playing music with his hand. Then Saul sought to pin David to the wall with the spear, but he slipped away from Saul's presence, and he drove the spear into the wall. So David fled and escaped that night. Saul also sent messengers to David's house to watch him and to kill him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, 'If you do not save your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed.'" Now, this very scene in verse 11 is what this was the occasion then of this psalm, it is believed. In verse 12 it says, "So Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped." So again, that's the situation, and so we look at Psalm 59 now. Can I get a couple readers? Maybe one who would read through, maybe about verse 10, and then the other one to read through verse 17. Okay, Mike, go ahead and through 10 and Jared through 17 then.
"So the choir director said that Al Keshra, a nickname of David, when Saul sent men, they watched the house in order to kill him. Deliver me from my enemies, O God. Set me securely on high away from those who rise up
consume them in wrath, consume them till they are no more, that they may know that God rules over Jacob to the ends of the earth. Each evening they come back, howling like dogs and prowling about the city. They wander about for food and growl if they do not get their fill. But I will sing of your strength. I will sing aloud of your steadfast love in the morning. For you have been to me a fortress and a refuge in the day of my distress. O my strength, I will sing praises to you. For you, O God, are my fortress, the God who shows me steadfast love.
Okay. In a nutshell, what's taking place here? What do we see happening? Anybody want to kind of give just a brief description of this song? What do we see in the beginning? What's happening first?
David's crying out for God's help.
Okay.
Protecting from Saul.
Okay. Who's the enemy? What are some of the descriptions of the enemy? What does it seem like they're doing mostly here? Pardon? Yeah, they're lying in wait for him, aren't they?
The first two, the end of it, they saved me, bloodthirsty men.
Okay.
How much more descriptive can that be?
Yeah, and we talked about that's one of the elements quite often we see within a psalm, isn't it? This description of the wicked. What are they? I mean, they're bloodthirsty men, it says. They're workers of iniquity, it says in verse 2. So we're getting a very clear picture of who the enemy is. What are some of the characteristics of that? Yeah. What does it seem like, you know, at least, you know, it talks about they've come in verse 6, that at evening they return. And you can just imagine David, you know, being in his house, and here come these ones from Saul, and what does it appear that they're doing? Whether they're literally doing this or not, you know, what seems to be most directed at David? Was it physical harm, or was it something else?
They're shouting things. It's verbal.
Yeah.
They're screaming. Well, they're howling, bellowing with their mouths.
Yeah. So it seems like their speech, you know, they're insulting David. And, you know, when you look at this, how does David kind of interpret this, though? Is it directed at him, or is it directed at God? Or both? So it appears that they're kind of mocking God as well. And I think that's exactly how David is taking this. You know, who are you to be saying things like this? You know, who's, in other words, they're saying, you know, who's going to hear you and deliver you? You know, it's just like a total disregard for God, Jehovah God, isn't it? A disregard for God. So they're kind of mocking God almost. And, you know, that's another one of these elements that quite often you see within the psalm. So they're given a lot of verbal abuse. You know, you think about this, quite often that's what we see sometimes, isn't it? You know, with ourselves, you know, a lot of the criticism and so forth we get, you know, and a lot of the abuse we get, the punishment we get comes in the form not so much as physical, but it's exactly like this. It's exactly like this. A lot of verbal arrows thrown at us. And, yeah. So, but anyways, as we continue here, does God, I mean, does David want these people killed? Do you want them slaughtered?
Scattered. Do not slay them, but scatter them, lest the people forget.
Okay. So he's not asking that God just.
He's asking for fire and brimstone to be called down upon.
So David's not so much pleading for, again, we talked about this, didn't we? You know, this petition to punish my enemies. But is it, you know, does he want them destroyed completely? No. As Bill has already said, he wants them scattered. He wants them consumed, it says, you know, in a different kind of way. Not physically put to death, but just brought to nothing. And again, the purpose of that is for a lesson so everybody can see and remember what God did. And again, you see these references to how it affects God. In verse 13, consume them in wrath, consume them that they may not be, and let them know that God rules in Jacob. Let them know that God rules. Show them, God, who you are. May you be glorified. Let them realize who you are. And so the motivation, again, is to exalt God. So, but again, so it's interesting as you go through here, it repeats in verse 14 then, it's quite similar to verse 6, where it says, and at evening they return, they growl like a dog, and go around the city. They wander up and down for food, and howl if they are not satisfied. So we see them coming at night. David is pleading, you know, don't kill them, just scatter them, consume them that way. But in total, but then he recognizes that they may be coming back again at evening, as he will, as it would say here. But again, they're not going to be successful. And David wants that lesson. He wants people to see that lesson. They're not going to be successful. And therefore, he uses that terminology. You know, he's speaking of like this night when the dogs come, and then, you know, God, you take care of this situation. And then what's the result of it? In the morning, what happens? Even before God does this, David's already talking about, look in verse 16. But I will sing of your power. Yes, I will sing aloud of your mercy in the morning. In the morning. So when this period comes, when everybody can realize that God has consumed these enemies of David, David already believes he's going to be singing praises to God. He says, I will sing of your power. Yes, I will sing aloud of your mercy in the morning. For you have been my defense and refuge in the day of my trouble. To you, O my strength, I will sing praises. For God is my defense, my God of mercy. So, any questions, any comments before we go further? What kind of applications do you see with us in regard to the psalm?
I think in our everyday life, David's asked not to destroy them, but scatter them. I find that every day in my life, the same thing. I'm praying for my enemies. I don't want them destroyed, but I want to be able to understand them, and they understand me, and I ask for God to help me in that way. And why are we disagreeing on this? Why can't we come to a conclusion? Mostly at work, I have those issues on a daily basis. And you have to sit down and pray and say, help me through this, God. Help me understand the other person. Help them to understand me, why we have to do things like this. I believe that's an everyday struggle at work.
You know, I know Tim said it many times, but the Psalms are, even though this might have been in reference to a particular event, they're very generic in nature, aren't they? And they not only apply to David or to the children of Israel, but they apply to us, don't they? I mean, it's very much who we are, and there's lessons to be understood here. I think another very interesting element of all of this is, and I'm sure Tim's going to talk about this more in the future, but do you see Christ in this at all? When you think about what David was going through here, was this similar to what Jesus went through?
Was this not as physical towards the end of Christ's life, as he's being persecuted?
You see this mocked, verbal abuse, and all this kind of stuff.
He waited for opportunities.
Yeah, you know, he's the trust in God to deliver. You know, I really do believe that most of the Psalms, most of them, in one way or another, have a reference to Jesus Christ. And, you know, and again, it applies to you and me, doesn't it? You know, I think about that statement in regard to Jesus, that, you know, he knows what we're going through. You know, he understands who we are. He went through those things. David went through those things, that they trusted in God and they were delivered. And so there's a valuable, valuable lesson for us. Again, I'd like for you, and just we only got 2-3 minutes remaining, but turn back to that page 9 in the workbook here. And again, let's just very quickly go through this, some of these. The address, O Lord, to thee. Did you notice that in this song here? It was there quite often, wasn't it? David is addressing God several times. If you look through Psalms 59, several times here. I wish we had a little bit more time so we could actually go in more in depth with it. But quite often, it's not just simple, O Lord, but it's much more elaborate, isn't it? A much more elaborate pleading, as is mentioned in the book here. Is there references to past salvation? Maybe not so much, but a little bit, I think. You know, when it refers to, for instance, in verse 5, awake to help me, and behold, you therefore, O Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel. There's a lot of history there. The God of Israel. You know, he refers to, and let them know that God rules in Jacob. You know, this is kind of referring back to the past salvation, I think, in regard to. So again, I think we see at least a little bit of that element in this song.
Verse 16 also.
Verse 16.
Before the beginning, but at the end of verse 16, for you have been to me a fortress and a refuge in the day of my distress.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he's talking kind of about the future, but I think he's referencing that about the past too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's somewhat of a reference to that, right? Description of the wicked, I mean, we've seen that repeatedly. Bill mentioned the bloodthirsty men. Confession and plea for forgiveness. Didn't really see that one in this one, did we? As a matter of fact, if you look in verse 3, it says, not for my transgression, nor for my sin, O Lord, they run and prepare themselves through no fault of mine. So you don't really see that so much here, although there's this declaration of innocence. I mean, that's exactly what he said, isn't it? Okay. Statement of trust. I think we see that throughout, don't we? You know, especially, I think, in the last couple of verses there. Anytime you want to bring out a point, go ahead. We're about out of time. Petition to punish, you've certainly seen that. Petition to save me, seen that also, didn't you? Motive clause, that thy name might be glorified and the people know that thou art God. Did we see that? Where did we see that? Verse 13, and let them know that God rules in Jacob. Let them know. Here's a motivation to do this, God. Show that. that you are the ruler of Jacob. Vow of praise, where do we see that? 16 and 17, right there at the end. I will sing of your power. Yes, I will sing aloud of your mercy. Declaration of having been heard. Maybe not so much, but we certainly see the trust side of it, don't we? In those last two verses. All right. Yeah, I hope it did it justice. I hope you got something out of that. But, you know, again, the Psalms are just, they're so profound and application not only to David, but I think to Christ and to all of us. And, you know, one of the lessons I get in all of that is that God knows who we are. He knows who we are. Jesus can, he can relate to us. He can be a great mediator for us. So, any last thoughts, comments? Okay. I've been doing a lot of talking, but I hope the lesson is appreciated.